So my talk this evening is called A Fortunate Encounter, okay? A Fortunate Encounter, which I'll elaborate on as we go. Okay. So, Kashitigarbha, this is the name of the figure on the shrine this evening. And I'm going to talk something a little bit about the history of the figure, where the figure appeared, kind of where it is now, because it changed its geography in the world slightly when it appeared initially in India. Then I'm going to talk about the symbolism of the different various the posture what Kashitigarbha holds, and then I'm going to talk about the Buddha. And try and draw out the quality that Kashitigarbha, as it were, kind of is, expresses in the world. And in that, I'll mix up something about my own life and my own experience of Kashitigarbha Buddhism and my early life and so on. So that's how the talk's going to go. So firstly, the name of Kashitigarbha means something like earth seed or earth womb. Okay, earth seed or earth womb. And the figure appeared, as far as I can tell anyway, a few hundred years after the Buddha had died, the figure started to appear in India in people's meditations. But it wasn't a very, very popular figure in India. And as Buddhism migrated south and east, Kashitigarbha went with the migration, so to speak, and now the figure is very, very popular in Taiwan and Japan, etc. In fact, in Japan it's a very, very popular figure. Apparently, I've not been to Japan, but apparently you see Kashitigarbha by roadsides, at crossroads and places like that. He's a very, very, he's known as a protector of travellers. I suppose he looks like a traveller because he's got this kind of staff on his hand. In Japan, he's called Jizo. And so if you go there, you might see the figure. I first become attracted to the figure, I don't know, about 8 years ago. I was reading in a book about these different bodhisattva figures, and I read about the story of Kashitigarbha and his particular qualities, which I'm going to talk about a bit later, or in a minute. And it did move me. These particular qualities moved me, and that's what I'm going to talk about this evening. So when I talk about the figure, I'm going to talk about it in an imaginative kind of way, a reflective kind of way. So, just bear with me. I'm going to try to elaborate on things and open things up. I'm just trying to use my imagination to try and draw out the qualities, to try to get to the qualities of this particular bodhisattva. And these figures are, as I said, I think I said it earlier today, that they're multi-layered figures. They're multi-layered with symbolism. I'm talking about the sun and the moon, the solar and the lunar symbols being part of these images. Kashitigarbha also has solar and lunar symbols associated with a figure. He usually stands on a golden lotus, which you could say is a masculine principle, and on top of that is usually a white moon mat, which again represents the feminine principle of receptivity. So we've got a figure standing on those two qualities, this enlightened figure standing on those two qualities, okay? So enlightenment comes out of that. And also the figure, all these figures, they usually have a story to them. So they're a kind of a story in form. They're a kind of a mythology in form, an embodied mythology. There's usually a story around them when you look into them. And I personally need a mythology in my life. I personally need a mythological context to contain my experience, to contain what it means to be a human being, the experiences that I have, the experiences that I see other people have. When I was, it was kind of the opposite to Sabhajamati with her eternalistic kind of upbringing in Catholicism. I was not born into a religious family, so I was an atheist, and I had quite a nihilistic kind of attitude towards life, and that led me in a particular direction. I think when I was about 16 or 17, I couldn't almost bear the thought of just working and working and working and then dying. And it's like life was completely meaningless to me. It really did trouble me. And that led me into kind of drugs and drink and all sorts of other activity, which I'll talk about a bit later. But that's because I had a nihilistic view of life. And, well, practicing Buddhism means that I have a very, very large context, probably it's the biggest perspective that I've come across that contains human experience. So that's part of my connection with Buddhism, connection with this figure. So it's a kind of myth in form. There's a story about this figure, which I'm going to tell you in a minute. So the figure I meditate on is this figure. Kshitigarbha comes in all sorts of different forms. So often you see him seated in a meditation posture with his leg coming down, like Grintara, you saw the leg kind of moving down into the world. But I meditate on this figure, which is a standing figure. Which isn't really a standing figure. The figure is actually moving towards you. He's moving, he's active. He represents compassion. The activity of the Buddha is compassion. So Kshitigarbha is moving towards you. He is moving towards you. The Dharma's there, as it were. It will try to move towards you if you open up to it. He's also a monk. Usually comes in the form of a monk. And to my knowledge, there aren't any other figures in the tradition, a bodhisattva figure, that come in the form of a monk, which is quite unusual. The only other figure might be the Buddha, and the Buddha can come in all sorts of different forms archetypally. But the Buddha wasn't really a monk, he was more of a wanderer of his time. So what does this symbolise? What does the monk symbolise? Well, firstly, one point is that we don't need to be a monk to practice Buddhism. It's not saying that you need to give up everything. It's not saying that you have to become celibate. It's not saying anything like that. So you don't have to become a monk to be a serious practicing Buddhist. You just need to, try and practice ethics, take the Buddha as your teacher, and decide to practice in a particular tradition. That's kind of enough to be a Buddhist. So he's wearing robes. This is what the monks associated with, the robes. And we could think about the robes as being about renunciation. You know, he's got rid of the usual garb. But I don't think about these robes or Buddhism in that kind of way, in a kind of renunciation. What I see when I see those robes is freedom. Okay, complete freedom, complete utter freedom. So he's completely free from, as it were, his conditioning, the conditioning that he's been brought up with in his family, in his society, by the TV. You know, lots of we pick up lots of views and ideas from the TV. In fact, probably lots of children these days are parented by the TV. So there are lots of views coming through. And Kshitigarbha's completely free. He's understood his own mind. He's understood his own conditioning. And he's not driven by that anymore. He hasn't got a reactive mind. So he's completely free to make choice. And that's what mindfulness does if we really do develop it. We become aware of our own reactions and reactivity. And we become free from that. And we can choose what we want to do in the world. So there's choice and freedom when we practice. In his right hand, he holds this kakara, it's called. You can see it a bit. You can see the bottom of the kakara up here. Maybe when you come forward later on, you can see. But he holds it in his right hand. And there's six rings on this kakara. It's like a stick, like a travelling stick, if you like. And those six rings represent, they're on the right side of the body. So I think I mentioned this earlier, that the right side of the body is associated with activity and the left side, receptivity. So the right side is associated with what he does, his actions. So there's these six rings. you think about a ring, they're very, very powerful, very, very strong. You can't break them. If you try and get a ring, you can't. They're a very, very powerful thing. And these rings represent the practices of the Bodhisattva. So the Bodhisattva practices what we call the perfections. And they are generosity, ethics, receptivity or forbearance, patience, energy, meditation and wisdom. Okay, they're the six practices of the budding Bodhisattva. All Bodhisattvas are said to practice these six paramitas, and they're from a particular tradition, from the Mahayana tradition, these six paramitas. So I'll say them again. They're generosity, ethics, forbearance or patience, energy, meditation and wisdom. I'm sure we're going to hear more about those different qualities as we move through the retreat from the different speakers. In fact, Subhadramati might say something about ethics tonight and how important it is to practice ethics. So I kind of see Kshitigarbha as a rebel. He looks, you could see a monk as a kind of conformist, but I see him as a rebel. And for me, I need to have a rebel somewhere in my life. Because when I was younger, I was quite rebellious. I couldn't quite fit in. I couldn't quite fit into society. And I do see Buddhism as radical and a kind of rebellion. That's how I see it. And that the rebel in me revels in the Dharma. So that's one of the ways I see Kshitigarbha. So the left side of the body, we've got he holds a jewel called the Chintamani. Chintamani is a very, very special jewel. It's synonymous with enlightenment, and it's said to be a kind of a wish-fulfilling gem. A very, very special jewel. And, this is a quality of enlightenment. Imagine what it would be like to have a jewel that granted all your wishes. Imagine that. I mean, all your wishes would be granted, wouldn't they? You wouldn't need anything. So Kshitigarbha is completely and utterly content. He's completely utterly content with how he is. So this is what this jewel represents. And also it's a jewel, it's the feminine side of the body, so it's associated with relatedness. It's drawing you in. There's a particular quality of the Dharma, of fascination. So some of you might... I mean, I'm fascinated with the Dharma. I get drawn into the Dharma. And this is what this jewel represents, fascination. It's actually fascination with enlightenment itself. It's fascination with wisdom and compassion. So there's visual beauty there. So that's a bit about the figure and some of the symbolism. Now I'm going to talk about the particular mythology around Kshitigarbha and a particular sutra where he appears. As far as I know, he appears in one major sutra. Sutra means kind of thread. It's usually where the Buddha's giving a teaching to some disciples or some lay people, or one of the Buddha's important disciples is giving a teaching. So this sutra is called the Sutra of the Fundamental Vows of Kshitigarbha, something like that anyway. Some fundamental vows that he takes. So in this particular sutra, the Buddha's in the sutra, it's an archetypal sutra, so there's lots of colours, there's lots and lots of beings, there's lots of strange things. And he's having a conversation with some bodhisattvas, and he says, "I'm worried." He says, "I'm worried. When I'm gone, I don't know who's going to go. I don't know who's going to go and help the beings in the hell realms. I don't know who's going to go and help the beings that are lost and forgotten, and the ones that are condemned. The ones that are very, very difficult to convert to the Dharma." He's worried about this. He's really worried about it. And then suddenly in the sutra, all these emanations of Kshitigarbha appear from all around the universe. This is how these sutras talk, things coming from kind of everywhere. And these emanations manifest in front of the Buddha, and the Buddha has a conversation with Kshitigarbha, and Kshitigarbha just reassures the Buddha, and he says, "Don't worry, I will go to the hell realms. I will go and help these beings that are lost and forgotten and condemned. So this is the mythology around Kushiti Garba. So Kushiti Garba is associated with hell realms. In the sutra there are lots of different hell realms. I can't remember how many they are, but there are lots and lots of different hell realms. There are ice realms. We had some ice down here earlier. Let me see. An ice realm is a kind of a hell realm where everything gets stuck. Yeah, so you imagine you're just completely blocked emotionally or something. It's a kind of negative mental state that it's getting at. And you've got all these fire realms and other hell realms. So it's saying that we can get into all sorts of difficult kind of mental states. And this is where Kushiti Garba goes and helps those beings in those particular states of mind. So he takes this particular vow in the sutra, and it's a vow that all the bodhisattvas are said to take. And this draws out the altruistic principle of Buddhism, and that is he vows to lead all beings to enlightenment before he gets enlightened himself. Okay? So he wants to help everybody else before he kind of helps himself. So this is the big altruistic principle of the bodhisattva. Yeah, so he goes into the hell realms and he helps these beings. And he, as I say, reassures the Buddha. So symbolically, what this means is that Kushiti Garba's goes to places that others won't go. He's kind of represents that aspect of the Dharma that will be able to reach into a difficult state of mind and help you. Okay? So that's what you're doing when you're chanting his mantra. If you're in a difficult state of mind, you can invite Kushiti Garba in. You're inviting the Dharma into a difficult state of mind. Maybe you're in a hateful state, or you're worried, or you're frightened, and you're chanting and you're inviting Kushiti Garba in to transform those bad states of mind. So we've probably all got these places in us, haven't we? We've all got these, you know, in the communication exercises. You sit there and you realise you're kind of sitting like this and like this, and, you know, trying to cover yourself up. You're trying to defend yourself. And there's all these kind of places in us that we defend, the kind of the places around the heart that are well defended. And the Dharma helps come in and thaw those places, as it were. Yeah, so that's what the Dharma does. It comes in and softens with compassion, with this particular quality of compassion from Kushiti Garba's compassion. So I want to talk about this compassion element by talking about a story in the early Buddhist tradition about the Buddha. I want to demonstrate this kind of quality that Kushiti Garba has by actually talking about the Buddha going to somewhere where it's quite difficult. So I'm going to talk about the Angulimala Sutta. So sutta again means thread, or it means just a teaching. So this is from early Buddhism. Now Angulimala's name means something like finger necklace. So the story goes that the Buddha was, he'd meditated, he'd gone into the local town, Shravasti, I think the name of the town is, for his alms food, and he goes around the different houses. The Buddha's not fussy about what food he eats, so he just takes the food and he goes off and eats the food. And then he tidies himself up and he goes off and he walks off. He's wandering. That's what the Buddha does. The Buddha wanders around India. And he starts wandering towards this very dark, deep, dense forest. And on the track he comes across some people, and some people say, "Don't go that way, Lord. Please don't go that way. There's a bandit in the forest. He's called Angulimala. If he gets you, he'll kill you and he'll cut your finger off and make it part of his necklace." So the Buddha listens, as the Buddha usually does. And he seemingly takes no notice, and he walks on towards the forest. who's walking along the forest, and again another group of people come up and they say, don't go in there, there's this bandit in there, he's got a sword, he'll chop you up, etc. And the Buddha again appears not to take any notice, although he's definitely listening to these people. So we don't know what's going on with the Buddha. The Buddha is a kind of an unpredictable kind of person, because the Buddha's operating on a different kind of level than what we usually operate. The Buddha wouldn't be frightened, for instance, of what he's heard. And he also wouldn't be taken in by what other people are telling him about the reputation of this particular demon, as it were, in the forest. So, okay, fair enough, Angulimala's a killer. But he's more than a killer. This is what the Buddha's thinking. He's more than a killer. He's not just a killer. He's got this reputation, but the Buddha understands that there's a being in the forest. And this being has a potential. Has a potential, just like all the rest of us, to come enlightened. So the Buddha carries on into the forest. And Angulimala sees the Buddha, picks up his sword and his whip, and he goes after the Buddha. And he's kind of running after the Buddha, and he can't catch up with the Buddha. He doesn't know what's going on. He's a really powerful man. He's a very, very big man. He's murdered lots of people, and he's running at full speed, and the Buddha's just carrying on mindfully walking along, looking down in front of him. And then this exchange happens. I'll read from the sutta now. I can find it. There we go. So Angulimala is chasing the Buddha, and it says here, the Blessed One wield a feat of psychic power such that Angulimala, though running with all his might, could not catch up with the Blessed One walking at normal pace. Then the thought occurred to Angulimala, isn't it amazing? Isn't it astounding? In the past I've chased and seized even a swift running elephant, a swift running horse. But now, even though I'm running with all my might, I can't catch up with this wanderer walking at normal pace, this monk. So he stopped and called out to the Blessed One, stop, monk, stop! And then the Buddha turns round to Angulimala and he says, I have stopped, Angulimala, you stop. So this is the exchange that happens. So then the thought occurred to Angulimala, these Shakyan wanderers, so the reference, the Shakyan there means something like, refers to the Shakyan clan that the Buddha was born into, which was actually a warrior clan. So the Buddha comes from a warrior clan at the base of the Himalayas there. So he says, Then the thought occurred to Angulimala, these warrior Shakyan wanderers are speakers of the truth, asserters of the truth, and yet this wanderer, even while walking, says, I have stopped, Angulimala, you stop. Why don't I question him? So Angulimala, the bandit, addressed this verse to the Blessed One. So this is Angulimala talking to the Buddha. While walking, monk, you say, I have stopped. But when I have stopped, you say, I haven't. I ask you the meaning of this. How have you stopped and how haven't I? Okay? So this is the encounter, this is the fortunate encounter that I'm talking about in my talk. So then the Buddha turns round and he says, I have stopped, Angulimala, once and for all. Having cast off violence toward all living beings, you, though, are unrestrained towards beings. That's how I've stopped and you have not. Okay, so that's an exchange between the Buddha and Angulimala. The Buddha gives him a very, very direct teaching. There's no niceties. It's just, you stop, blah, 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 blah. So then Angulimala says, at long last, a greatly revered great seer for my sake has come to the great forest. So Angulimala recognises that the Buddha's actually come to see him. He's actually come to see him. The Buddha knew all the time that there was this man suffering in the forest. So the Buddha goes to, as it were, this difficult place that no one else is willing to go. So, Angulimala continues, it says here, having heard your verse in line with the Dharma, I will go about having abandoned evil. So saying, the bandit hurled his sword and weapons over a cliff into a chasm, a pit. Then the bandit paid homage to the feet of the well-gone one, that's the Buddha, and right there requested the going forth. So he's requesting the going forth, that's him requesting the teaching of the Buddha. The awakened one, the compassionate great seer, the teacher of the world, along with its devas, said to him then, come, Bhikkhu. That in itself was bhikkhuhood for him. So that means at the end there that the Buddha accepted him as a disciple and he became a disciple of the Buddha. So that's the story there of the Buddha actually going into a difficult place where no one else would go, actually to help Angulimala. So there's a bit more yet from the Angulimala Sutta. Angulimala goes back with the Buddha. He shaves off his head. He puts on some robes and he's now a disciple of the Buddha. And one day, King Pasanadi of Kosala, who's the local king of the local area, he goes out hunting. And he's out with all his army. And he comes across the Buddha. And he knows the Buddha. He knows the Buddha very well. In fact, he's got a lot of respect for the Buddha. And he goes and pays his respects. And the Buddha says, you know, what are you up to? You know, why are you out with all your soldiers, all your army? So King Pasanadi says, I'm looking for Angulimala. So the Buddha says, what if you saw Angulimala with a shaved head and wearing a robe? He said, I will respect Angulimala. Okay? So the Buddha says, look, there's Angulimala. And King Pasanadi is completely shocked. But he goes over and he pays his respects to Angulimala. This is all a bit strange, isn't it? Because Angulimala is a murderer. But this is the respect that King Pasanadi had for the Buddha and the Buddha's disciples. And then King Pasanadi says, for what we could not tame, even with blunt or bladed weapons, the Blessed One has tamed without blunt or bladed weapons. So I'll say that again. This is what the king says. He says, for what we could not tame, even with blunt or bladed weapons, the Blessed One has tamed without blunt or bladed weapons. So this is a reference to, you know, the king's completely shocked that he's managed to tame this bandit through love. And the king's used to taming people through using the sword, obviously, and dominating, using power to dominate other people. And there's a reference to this kind of quality in the Dhammapada. So the Dhammapada is the early sayings of the Buddha. And I just want to read some of the verses just to give you an idea of what the Buddha says about how we relate to violence. So those who entertain such thoughts as he abused me, he beat me, he conquered me, he robbed me, will not still their hatred. Those who do not entertain such thoughts as he abused me, he beat me, he conquered me, he robbed me, will still their hatred. Not by hatred are hatreds ever pacified here in the world. They are pacified by love. This is the eternal law. So I'll read that last verse again. Not by hatred are hatreds ever pacified here in the world. They are pacified by love. This is the eternal law. So that's a kind of a cross-reference to this particular sutra where the Buddha goes into that difficult place, a difficult place where there's a lot of disturbance, a lot of hatred, and, he uses love and compassion to, you know, to transform Angulimala, basically, It's of course, it is the Buddha, so the Buddha's got a lot of experience in this. It's it'd probably be a different kettle of fish for us. We'll probably be very, very frightened. But for the Buddha, obviously, it's quite straightforward. So, this is the quality of Kshitigarbha. This is the quality of the Dharma going into somebody's life and transforming their life. And I think that's been it's been a bit like that for me. So, in my early 20s, I talked about being caught up with drugs and stuff like that. When I in my late teens and my early 20s, and I ended up going to prison for a period of time. And then I come out of prison. I had quite a difficult time in prison, and probably, and after that, I was really searching for something. I didn't know what it was, but it took me 10 years to find out what that was. And it was actually me coming to the LBC, and I did have an early opportunity to talk about my experience at the LBC, and I did feel very well, kind of accepted. You know, if you've been to prison or something like that, or if you've done something. You might have done something in your life that nobody else even knows about. I've probably done things like that in your life. You can have a bit of a chip on your shoulder. You can kind of, yeah, not feel accepted by people. But when I went to the LBC, I did feel that I was accepted, and I was accepted for who I was. And this is that quality of just recognising potential. As Kshitigarbha goes into the hell realms, he knows there's a potential Buddha there, or a potential Bodhisattva there, and that's what he relates to, and that's what the Buddha relates to. And as I said, when I come to the Buddhist centre, I did feel like people relating to me as a human being, not what the reputation was, so to speak. And that was very, very important in my being able to integrate that that experience of the past, and actually trying to understand how I'd got myself into that situation. So that's kind of where I've encountered the Buddha and where I've encountered Kshitigarbha in my life. So yeah, Kshitigarbha represents the willingness to engage with the difficult, the uncomfortable, the lost, the condemned. It's obviously really, really emphasising the altruistic principle. Kshitigarbha's, the altruistic principle. Often in Buddhism we can think, oh, it's all about me, it's about my feelings, I need to become integrated, I need to become more positive. That's all true, but we need to be taking that out into the world simultaneously. We need to think about the altruistic principle. So we all need to remember that we've all got this potential. We've all got this potential to grow. We've all got this potential to integrate, and we've all got this potential to become a Buddha or a Bodhisattva. Thank you.